a saint, maybe might be nice.
Greetings, siblings, and welcome to episode 8 of Dear Uncle Tony. I'm your host, Kate Goodnight, Zide 2002. This month marks our final episode of season 1, and I'd like to personally thank every sibling who's contributed their art, music, time, and energy to this season. That said, we are currently looking for new content for season 2, and are always open to suggestions of what the Zide siblinghood would like to hear on the podcast. So please get in touch. You can call our hotline at 919-709-3327. That's 919-709-DEAR. You can leave up to 3 minutes of audio. Whether you'd like to give us feedback or a new idea, read an original piece, tell a short haul story, or just leave a greeting for Uncle Tony. You can also email us at submissions@DearUncleTony.com. Now, I've buried the lead. This episode is season 1's final Get a Job interview, featuring Sister Jen Ruff, who's currently in veterinary school in Ames, Iowa. Jen is the first alum we've spoken to who's actually still in school, albeit at the graduate level. As you'll hear, she took time out of her tight schedule to talk to me about the rigors of professional school, the benefits of the science program at UNC, and how the creative outlet she found at the hall during her undergrad years has kept her going during the long hours of study and practice for becoming a vet. If anyone is considering continuing your education in the sciences after completing an undergraduate degree, this episode is an excellent place to start your personal research.
So I'm Kate Goodnight, and I'm just going to let you introduce yourself, name, pledge class, where you live right now, and what's going on.
All right. I'm Jen Ruff, Zi 10. I currently live in Ames, Iowa, because I attend vet school at Iowa State University. I just finished my second year of vet school.
Second of three?
Second of four.
Oh, four. Okay, right.
Yeah.
So it's like full-on med school type thing, but for creatures.
Yeah, we do our first 3 years in the classroom, and then our fourth year is spent working in the clinic.
So in your own words, what do you do sort of on a daily basis as a vet student?
Usually we have a combination of labs and classes that start at 8 in the morning and run till around 5. Each semester kind of varies on what classes we're taking. But school makes up most of my day. So come home, eat dinner, take care of my animals, and then spend the rest of the night studying usually. The school provides us a lot of great opportunities through clubs. We can go to different meetings, and then they hold wet labs that are usually in the evenings where we get some hands-on opportunities based on the club that's involved with it. So usually I'll have one wet lab and or dinner meeting a week, and that about makes up my days.
Do you have animals? What kind of animals do you have?
I have a dog and a cat.
So, Jen, what did you major in at Chapel Hill?
I was a biology major, and then I got a chem minor because it comes with the biology BS, so I didn't really have a choice there.
There you go. So is that something you did on purpose, that you wanted to go into a science field? Did you always want to be a vet?
Yeah, I didn't always know I wanted to be a vet, but I knew I wanted to do something in medicine. There was a short period of time where I thought about going to human med school, but realized that just wasn't for me. So I've known I wanted to do it for a while, but you don't have to major in a science to go on to vet school. I know there are a couple of my classmates that weren't any sort of science major, and a couple of them that didn't even get a bachelor's degree. You just have to complete the prerequisite courses. It just lines up really well with a science major because you're pretty close anyway after you've taken all the prereqs.
Do you feel like you're a step ahead to some degree than folks that haven't? I mean, I guess if, you know, you're putting in all the time and preparation to complete those courses anyway, but at the same time, do you feel like you're a little bit more prepared than some just for having a BS?
I don't think necessarily so. I think that being a science major at UNC in particular prepared me for the rigor of the classes here. I was used to studying a lot, but as far as material goes, our first year, a lot of it is spent kind of reviewing basic science that's important as our foundation. So everyone kind of gets in a level playing field after that.
Yeah, first year at Hogwarts. Doesn't matter if you're muggle-born, it's cool. We're just going to make sure you know the fundamentals, break it down.
Yep.
Did you go straight to vet school right out of undergrad?
I did, yeah.
Do you like that? Dive right in, get it done?
I think it was good for me to go straight from undergrad, just because I don't know if I would have had the motivation to go back to school after being out in the real world and doing something. But also, this is what I've always wanted to do, so I don't really know what else I would do if I didn't go to vet school. But just kind of get in, get it over with.
I hear you. Yeah, kind of, well, in a way, I finished grad school not too long ago. Certainly not anything as rigorous as vet school. If I had done it right out of undergrad, I probably would not have known at all what to do. So there's it's a big part of it, I'm sure, especially when you're investing in yourself, time and money-wise.
Yeah.
Let's just change gears for a second. So you said you've kind of always known that you wanted to do something in medicine and then kind of decided maybe not human medicine. Was there something, a really significant experience that you've had in terms of choosing this career path? Did you have like a specific job or a mentor or just an experience as a kid or a teenager that really kind of pointed you in that direction?
I don't know if there is a specific one that pointed me in the direction. I've kind of grown up with a love and interest in animals, in particular horses. So from what my parents and other family members have told me, it's always kind of been on my mind. But definitely one summer in college, I don't remember, I think it was after my junior year, because it was when I was applying to vet school, but I worked for this really great mixed animal doctor at home, and that kind of solidified that I was doing the right thing and that it wasn't just like, oh, I love animals. It was that I was actually interested in the everyday medicine, and like, this would be a job that I would wake up and want to go to in the morning.
Sure. Certainly a good reinforcement to have there. But that's awesome. So horses, are you interested specifically in large animals or horses? I would imagine there's probably a big field for horses, even though I know they're not the travel and work animals that they used to be.
Yeah, it's definitely not the biggest moneymaker of the vet things that you can choose, but it's where my interest lies, in particular in surgery. So I'm hoping to go on and do an internship and then a surgical residency after I graduate, focused exclusively on horses.
Anywhere you're hoping to do your internship?
I'm starting to look some now. I have a list of about 5 places that I'll go. Our fourth year, in addition to working in the clinics, we also have some time off to go visit these places and do what they call externships, which is basically a working interview for an internship. It gives you a chance to see if you like it there and gives them a chance to see if they like you. So I'm starting with my list of 5, and hopefully as I start to go visit, it'll narrow down where I'm actually interested in going.
Gotcha. So are they just all over the country or even out of the country maybe?
Kind of all over the country. I've picked 1 in Oklahoma, 1 in Colorado, 1 in New Hampshire, 1 in Florida, and 1 in Kentucky. So all over the place.
Oh, there you go. Florida, huh? That's interesting. See, I'm thinking, okay, Colorado, trail ride, sure, Kentucky, you've got the Derby. Florida, okay.
Florida's a big one, actually, and I'm
really?
From Florida
awesome.
Originally, and it's huge horse country, and that's the conflict I deal with all the time. I don't really want to move back to Florida, but the horse business there is so huge that sometimes I just think, you know, there's a good chance that I might end up there, and it might not be so bad.
Yeah, where from in Florida are you?
Tampa.
Tampa, okay, so you're on the Gulf side.
Yep.
Well, with any job, and I know I've had several myself in my short life here, is there something that really gets you going about being a vet? Like, what's the most exciting part of vet school? And then what's the most exciting part that you think is going to be when you get out and actually working in the world?
Let's see. Most exciting part of vet school. probably when we get to do hands-on things, just because we do sit in the classroom all day, and especially because we're sitting in the classroom learning these things. So when we do hands-on stuff, a lot of times we recently learned kind of the theory behind it, and it's really exciting to go do something and, you know, maybe you've done it before, but then you go do it and you're like, oh, wait, I know why we're doing this now.
Sure, yeah.
It gives you motivation, too, to remember that there is life outside the classroom, because sometimes you get in your little study tunnel and it's just like, oh, I'm going to be stuck in the books forever, but there's a world outside of that.
Did you say study kennel?
Study tunnel, yeah. All the walls closing around you, and you're just you and your computer.
Nice. So it is not a safe space.
Yeah.
So conversely, then, what's the worst part? What's the worst part about vet school?
Just the hours. And when you really get in the thick of exams, you don't have a life. And it really stinks sometimes. But especially our second year is supposed to be the hardest year of vet school. So we were really in the thick of things. And the last, you know, month maybe of school, it was wake up, go to school, go home, study, sleep for 3 or 4 hours, and then wake up and do it all over again every day of week, weekends included. And so there are just some times where it's what you've got to do, and you've got to buckle down, and it's worth it in the end. But sometimes it is hard to see the light at the end of the study tunnel.
Yeah, no kidding. Haven't had quite that experience, but yeah, when I was in grad school, I was working full time, and then we had class from about 6 p.m. to 9:30 at night. So yeah, you'd get up, go to work at 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, get off at 5, maybe get something to eat, go back to class for 3 more hours, and then go home and all of that stuff. I don't know. Have you met anybody that seems to thrive under that pressure, that really is like, yeah, it's exams?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't know.
pretty normal, reactive human in this term.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, you're currently in school, and I would imagine you're learning a lot of foundational stuff, and I mean, now you're in your second year, you're getting a little bit beyond that, but sort of things that have always been around to some degree, but I'm sure just like human medicine, there are a lot of new technologies and developments and stuff like that. Is there anything that you're particularly excited about, or anything that you're kind of wary of, that you're just not really sure is, you know, the direction things should be going or the direction you'd like to see things go?
I don't really know a whole lot, just because the field is so broad. But one thing that I think is pretty interesting that is really becoming a big thing in equine medicine is sports medicine and rehabilitation. That's kind of been a thing in the canine world for a while with all of the agility dogs. But they just recently established a residency program for sports medicine, and it's starting to take hold. But that's kind of where the money is starting to be as far as specialty equine practices go. And I don't know if that's what my like top interest is, but I do think it's pretty interesting. They have a lot of cool things, like those infinity pools for horses, and they have treadmills. Sure. And all kinds of crazy stuff that you can do to help horses get better from sports injuries. So I think that's pretty neat.
Obviously, I know horse racing's a thing, and polo and stuff. Are there other sports that horses are really involved in? I don't know. Is steeplechasing still like an Olympic sport?
I don't think it's an Olympic sport. I think the Olympics do the 3-day eventing. A lot of the Western horses, the like working horses that do cutting and reining, they get injured a lot because they have to make quick stops and turns to get the cows and stuff like that. The kind of the area that I'm interested in is the jumping horses, and they also kind of come with their own set of injuries. All the sport horses get injured, but they all kind of have their own little niche of injuries that you see most commonly with that type of sport.
Things that you would come to expect and people would really hone in on. I mean, I would imagine obviously when you're training a horse, there's certain things that you do, but do they have sport specific exercises or sport specific strength training?
I don't really know about that. I know, I mean, definitely just like the general conditioning and riding, and make sure they get enough exercise so that they have the muscle tone that is required to perform. But yeah, I guess probably. I know I rode jumpers when I was a kid, and there are definitely some specialized, they call them gymnastics, where they have to go over some jumps that requires a little more agility. And those are, I know, really good for both horse and rider.
Sort of training to get you accustomed. And everybody's got their own specialty, but is your field growing, or is there any particular part of the vet medicine world that you feel like is really taken off, or it's really kind of expanding?
I don't know if it's expanding, but I know that there's definitely a need for aquaculture vets, which is really interesting because there aren't a ton of people that are into fish, but with farmed fish and all of that becoming a lot bigger, the need for vets that work on fish has grown. So that's definitely an area that needs vets. And then another big area is poultry medicine.
Sure.
I guess there aren't a lot of people that are really into chickens, because if you work on chickens, you pretty much only work on chickens. So
most of the people that I know that have chickens, and actually I kind of know a lot of people that have chickens around here, but actually a lot of them have other types of birds as well. A lot of them have pheasants or peacocks. So would that, do you think that maybe fall under that same category? I know chickens aren't really game birds or wild birds in the same way.
Yeah, I think as far as the backyard chickens go, they do kind of fall under the same category as other types of birds. And there are people that specialize in exotics, and birds kind of fall under that category. And then kind of the other side of the chickens is the commercial chicken industry. And that's where the big need is. And it's just such a different mentality, because there are thousands and thousands of chickens that are housed in these barns. And instead of looking at each individual chicken, you have to make decisions about what would be best for the herd of chickens, or the flock of chickens as a whole. And you have to have a lot of business smarts too for that kind of thing, and be able to work with the producers to do what's best for the chickens and also best for them financially.
Yeah, I wonder about that sort of, I don't want to say a conflict of interest there, but at the same time, yeah, just the sort of psychological conflict of, okay, these birds are clearly being raised for meat and or eggs or both. I don't know if there's any crossover, but yeah, at the same time, just saying, okay, well, I've got to make sure that they are in good health so that they can be eaten, or so they can produce for these farmers. So do you run into that with horses? I would think maybe somewhat, but...
Yeah, not really. There's a little bit of a divide between the horses, but there are some horses that are mostly pets that, you know, they hang out in the backyard and they go on a trail ride every now and then, or tote the kid around the yard, and they're like a dog. And then there are kind of the horses that they're still kind of part of the family, but also they have some sort of performance job to do. And not saying that those people don't want to take care of their horses, because they do, but they also, then you have to consider, you know, how does this treatment affect this horse's performance versus this treatment, and how soon can they go back to doing work? And there are also some horses around here that work. There is a large Amish community, so we get a lot of big draft horses in the hospital that do pull equipment in the fields for them, or drive carts, and they have a job, and they have to be healthy so that they can do their job.
Yeah, almost like a car, I would imagine, right? It's like not just a pet, it's also an investment and a need.
Yeah.
So definitely the aquaculture and the poultry. Is there any, if you had to recommend somebody to take outside of your own, that you would suggest, is there a path?
I think it really depends on your interests. I've been amazed since starting vet school just how many different jobs you can have as a veterinarian. And most of the people I've met, I feel, have worked as a veterinarian but had two or three different roles that you think of your everyday veterinarian as just, you know, they work in a clinic and you take your dog and cat, and or take your horse, or they come out and see your cows. But there are a lot of vets that work in public health sectors, and vets that work in research and take care of lab animals. There's always academia that we have to have people to teach in the vet schools, and they're the pathologists. And one thing I thought was really interesting, we had someone come to talk to us that worked as a forensic pathologist for one of the national parks, and so when animals die in the park, she has to do the necropsy on them to figure out, you know, was it poisoned? Did someone shoot it, or did it just die of natural causes? And that was something that I was like, oh, I didn't know that veterinarians did forensics, but that makes sense.
Yeah, obviously you would want to know, especially if it's something in a national park that is potentially protected or endangered. Well,
yeah.
Cool. So I know that you're interested in horses. The love of animals probably plays into a lot of folks' decision to go to vet school, and that obviously need to be able to buckle down and whatnot. Do you feel like there's certain sort of personality traits that somebody needs to be successful as a vet? What are your colleagues like? Do you feel like there's a certain culture that comes with being a vet?
Yeah, there definitely is. We're all pretty driven and focused individuals. But also I found that vets and vet students kind of tend to be the work hard, play hard type of personality, that we do work really hard, but everyone is more than happy and more than willing to get together, and we all have a really good time when we don't have to focus on school. But everyone is, not in the same way, but everyone is a little bit intense and has something that kind of gives them an edge. Definitely the type A personality is pretty much all of us.
Yeah.
And I think just being kind of sympathetic, maybe even overly sympathetic, I know that that's something that kind of the field has been struggling with, is that a lot of vets now, they've turned to sympathetic burnout, where people just can't do it anymore because you care so much about the animals. And not that human doctors don't care about their patients, but having to deal with euthanasia, and that just animals don't live that lifespan that humans do. And a lot of vets can be there from the day that an animal is born until they have to help their family say goodbye to them. And I know that people think of vets as very driven, and a lot of times can think of them as kind of cold, as just, oh, I'm trying to take your money, and like, I'm charging you a lot of money for this. But they've come out a lot recently with saying that the vet personality is someone who tends to be overly sympathetic.
So do you feel like you have something specific to you that gives you your edge?
This year was kind of mellowed out my enthusiasm for the testing situation, but I am someone who thrives more on like stress and wanting to perform well. I enjoy being in school and I enjoy studying. It does get to the point now where I'm just like, okay, enough's enough, back off. But
yeah.
I just enjoy learning a lot. And I thought, in addition to me wanting to be a surgeon, I've thought a lot about going into academia and working as a surgeon at a teaching hospital, just because I enjoy the academic environment and I enjoy teaching and learning. And I like the way that dynamic works.
Well, cool. Have you gotten an opportunity to teach some?
Not formally, but with trying to learn all of the information, all of my classmates kind of have strengths and weaknesses, and it definitely works better if we help each other out. I think as time has gone on, you tell who does best in what subjects, and so we try and get little study groups going, and some of my classmates tutor for the classes below us, but I just enjoy helping my classmates learn, and we've set up little sessions where, you know, we kind of help each other, and someone will go over this for an hour, and then we'll switch, and someone will go over someone different. We'll teach a different subject.
Gotcha.
So just kind of a not informal environment, but it's fun.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've mentioned a couple of different fields that are centered around the veterinary universe. Is there a field that, maybe having learned about it previously, or maybe having learned about it through vet school, something that's related to your job but not really part of being a vet that you might like?
I like animal training, and I've worked at like a bunch of summer camps teaching kids how to ride horses.
Sure, yeah.
And I've worked some with my dog trying to train him to do tricks, and he likes doing agility stuff. We're not good at it, but we've worked on it a little bit. And so I think something kind of in that realm of teaching riding lessons, or I thought about too, if I didn't get into vet school, being from Florida, I was like, maybe I can work at one of those swim with the dolphin places and be a dolphin trainer. So probably something along those lines, still animal related, but
dolphins are cool and smooth and smart from what I've heard.
Yeah.
I've never actually gotten to do that. I've never met a dolphin.
It's fun. I did it once for my friend's 21st birthday. She had been wanting to go since she was like a kid. So we said we were taking her to breakfast and then actually took her to the dolphins.
Nice.
It was a fun surprise because the dolphins are like an hour away and breakfast was maybe 15 minutes away. And it took her way longer than it should have to realize that we weren't going to breakfast.
Like, no, we're going to this really cool place. It's like an hour away. Sorry. Well, all right. To sort of bring it back around to who we are and why I'm talking to you, we're both Zais. Do you feel like there's anything? No, let me start over. How, if at all, do you think that your time at or your connection with the hall has benefited what you're doing now?
I think that the biggest thing that the hall helped me with was in terms of leadership. And I've always had the go-getter type personality, and so that's through high school and earlier, it's kind of found me in some leadership roles, but really being a part of the hall and being a part of such a diverse group of people and then working my way up through different positions, taking on more and more responsibility as I grew through my time in the hall and through college, I think has really benefited me, because the veterinary field, you are pretty much always going to be working with some other person, if not multiple people. And I just think that learning how to work with a group of people for a common goal while those people are very diverse has helped me a lot in being able to work with my classmates and also with the clinicians at school. I also think another thing that has benefited me is it was a way to kind of maintain a creative outlet for me through college, because I probably wouldn't have written or drawn or painted or anything in college if I hadn't have joined the hall. And it's just such a nice outlet when I've been so science focused all the time to just kind of take a break and let my mind chill out. And that's something that I've carried over into vet school. There are definitely nights in college where people would just be like, oh, I'm bringing art supplies, come hang out, we're just gonna do art together. It's informal, and I've done that some with my friends here, where it was, you know, go to Walmart and get some paints and let's sit down and like put on some music and take a break from studying and paint something.
It can't be an animal. Nobody's allowed to paint animals. Take a break, guys. Sorry. No animals.
No animals.
So cool. Yeah. Well, I was actually going to ask if there was anything that you did carry over, but very nicely answered there. In my time at the hall, I was there from 2002 to 2006. We had a couple folks that were biochem majors. I know Gabby Haddock, or well, actually, God, what's her new last name? Gabby Riley was a biochem major and is still working in the science field. Do you have any advice for Zais who might be looking at vet school specifically, or any just general advice you have for going to professional school?
Let's see. I'll start with advice for going to professional school. And I think the most important thing for me was, I'm kind of a shy person, and I'm not terrible at making friends, but it's not the easiest thing in the world for me to do. And so definitely finding a support group, depending on where you are. I moved way across the country where I didn't know anyone. So here I had to make friends and just connections within the school, but building a support system, I think, is the most important just for your sanity, because grad school, no matter what you're doing, is intense. And also just forming connections professionally with people in your program or professors that you are interested in getting to know better or share similar interests to you, because I've had a lot of really great opportunities come from professors that I've just been like, hey, I'm interested in your work. Can we just have lunch sometime, talk? And then later down the line, they'll be like, hey, I have this project, or I know someone that's doing this project that you might be interested in. You know, are you interested? And it's opened a lot of doors for me. Science field, especially at UNC, the science program is really hard. And that school's supposed to be this big, rigorous thing, but I'm doing much better grades-wise in vet school than I ever did in undergrad. You know, my first 2 years of college, I probably slacked off and had more fun than focused on studying. But definitely my junior and senior year, like, I cracked down pretty hard because I was trying to get into vet school and needed to get my grades up. And still, I'm doing a lot better here than I ever did there. So don't get disheartened by the UNC science program, because I know sometimes it can just feel like, oh, I'm so stupid, why can't I do well in this class? But it really is preparing you to go on to things, and people do take into account the fact that you went through sciences at UNC, and, you know, your GPA might be a little lower, but the experiences that you get there really make a difference. And as far as art goes, everyone who's in the hall has some connection to something artistic. Even if you don't consider yourself artistic, you have an appreciation of it to be there. And so I definitely think that that's important to maintain throughout your time in a graduate program. If you just appreciate art, go to some museums, or, you know, go to a poetry reading or something, because it's very easy to get focused in on what you're doing and kind of forget about your other interests in the outside world. And it's so important to be a happy, rounded person.
I totally agree. And I think, yeah, that's one of the nice things about having art and, well, I'm having varied interest in general, but it's specifically art, because there's always an opportunity to go see a musician that you like or that somebody else likes and you've never heard of, but might be a cool way to spend an evening. Or there's actually a really good MFA program, creative writing program at UNCW, which is where I work. I have a lot of friends in town who are part of that program. And so they have regular readings and stuff like that. And it's funny, I found myself in the back of this used bookshop that is literally books to the ceiling in every single room. It has like five different little craggy rooms. And then there's this little stage area. And I went to the MFA readings one night, because they do them about three or four times a semester. And I'm sitting there sort of in the semi-dark on this concrete floor, just thinking, wow, I've been here before. Yep, I know what's up. I am in meeting right now.
Yep.
So, and it was great, because it did have that connection to that and that relaxed feel and that familiarity, but also just being able to have had that experience and know that, yeah, you're not going to like everything out there that everybody has to offer, but there is some level of appreciation for all of it, and the appreciation for being willing to share that side of yourself, whether, right, it's just a casual, hey, we're going to get together and paint mermaids, or, hey, I'm just going to go to this reading and there are going to be people that are braver than me that are going to get up and read something they've actually written. It's nice to have support on both sides of that and to have an outlet to be able to take some time out of whatever you're supposed to be doing, I guess.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to mention? Anything else we should know about you or your work or your school?
I don't think so.
Well, you're actually our first person who isn't currently working in their field, that they're just working towards it. I feel like you will be in a few years here.
Yeah.
But it's really cool to talk to you about school and to know that, because I have talked to several people who've been either, you know, working in the same job for a long time or sort of working in the same field for a long time, and then a couple other people who've worked in various different things and have kind of come to their current careers through, oh yeah, I did this and this and this, and I put that all together and now I'm doing this, and it all makes sense. And I think it's interesting to see how people get where they are and to see, yeah, how different people that joined the hall really are, because there are a lot of different interests out there and a lot of different types of personalities, and yet somehow we all managed to fit together and now we're doing a podcast about it. So.
Yeah.
But I think it's really cool that you really wanted to talk to us about this, and I look forward to hearing more about it and seeing you in the future. Yeah. You should definitely make it a point to come to Swing Out next year. That's what I'm saying.
I will hopefully do my best. I know it just worked out perfectly this year where we didn't have any exams. So keeping my fingers crossed.
All right. Well, man, I really appreciate you talking to me, and I will sign off and let you get on with your evening.
Sounds good.
Excellent. Well, thanks again.
Thanks for tuning in to Dear Uncle Tony. Special thanks to Sister Jen Ruff, Brother Michael Williams, and Sister KJ Garner. The interlude music you heard on the podcast is Ode to St. Anthony by Sister Charlotte Parrott. Dear Uncle Tony is a production of the Siblings of St. Anthony Hall's Side Chapter, presented by the St. Anthony Association of North Carolina. The podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 4.0 International License. If you'd like to contribute content to the show, you can contact us at submissions@DearUncleTony.com, or you can leave us a greeting on our Google Voice line at 919-709-DEAR. That's 919-709-DEAR. You can always support the podcast and the Zai Chapter with a secure online donation at www.stanthonync.org/donate. Thanks again for listening. Respectfully submitted.